Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. I just went on the longest work trip of my life.
Yeah, you were like gone. You went to what?
I was gone. Okay. Let's listen.
Break it down.
Let's
break it down for us.
Okay. Yeah. So I went by myself, drove to Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh my gosh.
Which is about 10 hours from here,
right.
Approximately. It was stops. That's me including stops, everyone. Then I drove back. Then I drove the next day to Indianapolis, which is the same way you go to Louisville, Kentucky, also 10 hours.
What?
This time I had other people, and then we drove back. So I went 40 hours of driving in the span of 2 weeks.
What?
Horrible.
That sounds hellish.
It was hellish. But you know what? We're going to Chicago in like 3 weeks or something
like that. Yes, but we're going to share the drive, so that won't be nearly as bad.
Yes, and to be honest, the drive is not that bad.
Okay, that's
like,
good.
I took half of the drive to Chicago twice, and
right.
It was very easy.
Okay, cool.
And I have going through St. Louis, a little, like, dicey, a little
St. Louis is kind of scary.
But, and just, like, a little dicey on the roads. It's like, it goes from, like, two-lane highway to, like, hey, here's eight lanes and 17
yes.
overpasses, and you're like, oh my god. But, got used to that, and I feel like we'll be okay, and then once we hit Chicago, we'll have that again.
Yep.
Which is why it happened for both of mine.
Cool. It's so exciting that you get to travel so much, but also it sounds exhausting.
It was exhausting. I don't know. I think I made mistakes were made this year
mistakes
by
were made.
Agreeing to go to both of those things, and I don't think I shall be making the mistakes again.
Yeah.
Your sweet little cat
is trying to get out,
even though we kicked her out, and then she just let herself back in.
Well, this door doesn't really close all the way.
My doors are the exact same.
And
I got the landlord special, and they don't work now. The doors don't work.
Yeah. Oh, man.
How are you, Jane?
I'm okay. We seem to be devolving into a theocracy of some sort.
That is accurate, yeah. I spent basically the entire day today with my dad just...
Ranting.
Yeah. It's hard because... Here's the thing, though. I do take... And this is because I'm a sort of petty evil person.
We all are.
Which is that... I have a feeling people have no clue what they have done. I know what they have done, and that puts me at an advantage.
Yeah.
Because I can say, like, okay, I know what to prepare for now.
Yes.
I don't think the men understand the kinds of consequences they will be suffering.
Yes.
In that random Tinder hookups, you can just go ahead and count those off forever.
Forever.
You can also just go ahead and say... I mean, here's what's going to happen, too. I believe that's next is birth control.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Plan B is already starting.
Any sort of birth control that prevents the fetus, the fertilized
egg
from implanting in utero.
Yeah.
Which includes Plan B, which includes IUDs,
mm-hmm.
which includes many forms of hormonal birth control. Any one of those that stops a fertilized egg from implanting, I do believe that those are out the window now.
Absolutely.
But here's the other thing, too. You leave it up to the states. That's what this is all about, right? Is like leaving
right.
it up to the states. Okay. States used to have... Condoms used to be banned.
Yeah.
And who's to say that states couldn't just ban premarital sex if the privacy in the bedroom law goes out the window, too? The, like, sodomy law goes out the
bedroom. Right.
Who's to say that unmarried men can't be... And then also, we live in an internet age now, okay? Roe didn't exist in the internet
mm-hmm.
age. Do you know how many people I see doxing people on the daily?
It happens
Rich,
all the time.
Here's the thing. The stats are such that over 60% of abortions are... over 60% of people that have abortions do have a religious affiliation.
Yeah.
Now, there's very few religions that permit for abortions, especially in non-medical cases. Almost
mm-hmm.
none that permit in non-medical
I think
cases.
Judaism.
Judaism permits in medical cases for
mm-hmm.
sure. So
Sorry, my cat is using the litter box, and this is the room with the litter boxes. So with our impassioned speeches, you will also hear scratch, scratch, scratch,
cats shitting.
Isn't that just a symbol for the age we live in?
It is. It's beautiful, actually.
It is. I think so, too.
But then...
In the arms of the angels.
But then, okay, it's not that those people... A lot of those people probably don't believe in abortion. You never believe in abortion until you need one, huh?
Yeah, huh?
Huh? And here's the thing. Everyone's just going to be like, well, let's keep it a secret. But all it's going to take is some smart internet doctor who's got a little bit too much time on their hands and a little too mad to figure out which Republican mistress just went on a little vacation to another state where, and we bought your period tracking app data, you stupid bitch. And here we go. And that's all it's going to take. And if you think, and here's the thing, they won't really care, but we can bring this to a more local level if we have to do it. And especially in places like Texas, I don't know how this is going to hold up, but with, like, bounty laws, people are going to be doing this to just collect cash.
Right. Like, it's just going to be, like, vindictive and just like, money hungry.
Like, quite frankly, no offense, but if, like, if some lady I knew who I hated, who is always spouting off about trying to ban abortions and, like, you're going to hell, you're a murderer or whatever, I found out that, like, she took her daughter to get an abortion or something, and I could... prove that, you best believe that would be getting turned into some authorities for some money. You think I'm not going to take $10,000 and your ass going to jail and you look like a total hypocrite in front of everyone that knows you?
Do you know me?
Know me. You don't know me. You have made a grave mistake, my friends.
Now, don't fuck with Allison.
Don't fuck with me. I will come for you in ways that are unimaginable. So
the day of reckoning. You're just like Papa John saying the day of reckoning is upon us.
I feel like Papa John, sweaty pizza grease just covering my whole body, and I'm ranting unintelligibly.
The day of reckoning is upon us.
And that's how I feel.
That's how I feel too, though.
It hurts and is really sad and disheartening, but at the same time, I am excited to see the horrendous fallout that this will... I'm not excited for the horrendous fallout that will affect all of the millions of women who don't want this. And in fact, most Americans don't believe we should ban abortion.
It's like 70%, right?
Yeah, like 70% of Americans don't think we should ban abortion. By the way, most of them in all cases.
Yeah.
So, whatever. But all I'm saying is, like, lock your fucking doors. That's what I'm saying.
Shit.
And for legal purposes, this has all been a joke.
Because you should be concerned.
Yeah, that is how I feel. I feel every single person that just voted for this should be highly concerned about their address finding its way to the internet.
Yes.
We live in the internet age, baby.
Did you see that Ivanka Trump got doxxed about her abortion?
I did see that.
Yeah.
And she deserves it.
And she deserves it because, remember when, did you see the speech where she was like, white lives?
Yes.
I was like, what? Okay. Either like typed out or for Freudian slip.
Freudian slip, I believe.
And I'm not sure which is worse.
I believe Freudian slip is what happened. I truly don't believe anyone typed out one time. Unless they're trying to fuck with her, but...
Right, that'd be so funny, though. Can you imagine?
I don't know.
Like, 10 years from now, there's going to be, like a biopic about the person who planted that.
I know. I have hard times because I know it's not a good feeling to like that Ivanka Trump got doxxed about her abortion. I know that that's bad.
It's a guilty pleasure.
But it is a guilty pleasure. It's like... I'm happy to see these people who, like, say all this junk. I'm happy to see them get a little taste of their own medicine. But it's not a happy thing. Like, I'm glad she was able to get an abortion.
But it's really fucking hypocritical.
Yeah.
It's beyond hypocritical, in fact.
Well, and it's... I mean, God, how more cliche can you get?
Right.
A fucking Republican senator takes his goddamn mistress to get an abortion. Wow, that's breaking news. That's new. Revolutionary.
I think his daughter is the one who got it. Who got the abortion.
Yes, it is. Yeah. But I just mean, like, anyone.
Right, anyone. Right.
Anyone. I mean, that's a tale as old as time, baby.
It's so true.
And here's the thing.
And they're always going to be able to get abortions.
And here's the thing, yeah.
They can just go to Japan.
Also, and here's the thing, too. There that's are states, what, there Roe are lots was- of states where they can go anywhere in the fucking, there's so many states. And here's the thing, a lot of states have medically necessary abortions. Well, who determines what's medically necessary?
Right.
Doctors and lawyers. And, you know, a rich white woman is not going to have a problem finding a doctor who deems her abortion as medically necessary.
Yeah.
Even if it's not medically necessary. But you know who's going to have a hard time finding a doctor who is willing to make a call that their abortion is medically necessary? A poor person who actually does need an abortion that's medically necessary, but we got to get on the phone with our lawyers for 9 hours while we make sure we're not going to get sued into oblivion and I'm not going to get charged for murder for giving this poor lady an abortion. And
it's so sad. I was listening to the You're Wrong About Roe v. Wade. I was re-listening to it because solace. And they were talking about how, like, wealthy women, it was a lot, like, for a long time, they would just hop a private jet and go to Japan and get abortions done.
Of course,
like,
I mean, yeah. Here's the thing. Any law that comes down to fines or any law that has, it's very hard to prove in a court of law that somebody necessarily broke that. Right. Any law like that is not a law for rich people. Rich people don't have laws.
No,
rich people have money.
Any law, anything that has a fine as like a punishment is not a law. It's just like a law for poor people.
It's just a punishment for poor people.
That's all it is.
Yeah, that's not a law. And rich people don't have laws. Rich people can murder. Rich people have murder. Rich people do murder. And they don't go to jail. Rich people, there are senators who have been, like, convicted of assaulting 13-year-olds, and they have won multiple terms since that time. Like, rich people don't have to follow the law. Poor people have to follow the law.
Yeah, the laws are only for poor people. That's all it is.
So, that's why I just think it's hard to say, but it's why these people getting doxxed feels good, because it feels like, and it's why I also don't feel bad if someone locally gets doxxed for that.
Right.
Because it's like guess what? You're not special. The exact reasons that you wanted an abortion are the exact reasons other people want abortions.
Exactly.
You're just the center of your own universe.
Yeah, you just can't put yourself in other people's shoes.
You just lack empathy.
Or just imagine that other people can be going through the same thing. Their children is what it is. It's like this egocentrism that they have. Like, they cannot see past their own.
It's just like a lack of, like, sophisticated thinking, really, is what it is. It's like a lack of ability to understand that, like, okay, the justifications that I'm using for my actions are the same justifications that other people use for their actions. What they think is happening, this is what I legitimately do believe that they think is happening.
Right.
Me, I need an abortion. Oh my God, I'm not ready to have a family. There's no way I could support this baby. It would be terrible. This baby is better off not alive. The shame, the whatever, the social act, like all of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. That's why they have to do it. They think other people are like, hate using condoms and birth control.
I hate fetuses. Ah!
And so I'm going to get pregnant with as many fetuses as possible and then abort them. And I'm going to wait until it's the third trimester so I can get them ripped out of my body limb by limb. Yeah, that's not happening. Nobody
is doing that.
Nobody ever has had those thoughts, I'm pretty sure. And there's 7 billion people on the planet, and I believe no one's ever had those thoughts. So it's just a lack of, like, the inability to go connection. And it's a lack of, like, ever having to have struggled.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, not understanding what it is for people in situations like that when you would never yourself be in a situation like that. I mean, 60% of all pregnancies are already unplanned.
Mm-hmm.
And a good majority of those people probably don't need to be having kids. But a lot of them probably could have a kid. They just weren't planning on having a kid.
Right.
And so the world decided it was time for them to have a kid. So here they are.
Yeah.
But more than anything, ladies and people who can get pregnant, just
people
with uteruses, protect your privacy way more than you think it's necessary. Nobody should know about anything to do with your reproductive health unless it is, you are now officially on a need to know basis for everything. Your period, whether or not you're buying birth control, whether or not you're going to buy a pregnancy test, who you're sleeping with, your doctor's appointments. That includes, by the way, your doctors. Your doctors are now on a need-to-know basis,
mm-hmm.
which is scary because women's health is already horrible and dangerous.
And we're the developed country with the highest maternal mortality rate.
Yeah, And, like, the field of gynecology is still fairly in its infancy and does not really value the comfort or opinions of women at all, despite the fact that it is literally the field of gynecology. So, you know, it sucks. It's sad. It's dystopian, even.
It's dystopian, even. That's the space I've been in.
But no one's coming to help. We have to wait for another 30 years for half of this Supreme Court to die.
To die!
And then, hopefully, things will swing back the complete opposite way, because people will be so fucked up by what's happening right now that they will not want that.
I mean, it's apocalyptic is what is happening.
It's apocalyptic. Lock your fucking doors. Supreme Court, lock your fucking doors.
This is a joke. So.
Oh my gosh. But now that we've talked about this,
we're going to do Coraline.
Thing in the world for 15 minutes, we're going to talk about the best thing in the world.
Oh, it's so good. So we're going to talk about Coraline. And so we both read this book whenever we were, like, over a decade ago.
Yeah, at least over
so
a decade ago.
I remember reading it in fifth grade. I might have read it a little after that too, but I know the first time I read it was in the fifth grade because I remember taking the AR test.
I don't remember when I read this. I do know it was at least 10 years ago because I was definitely younger than 14.
Right.
But this movie, I love this movie.
Oh, it's so good. It's beautiful.
I probably watch this movie at least a couple times a year.
Oh, yeah.
It's like one of my all-time favorite kind of like... It's so weird because it's so creepy, but it's one of my little, like, I just, like, feel-good movies.
Yeah, but it's so freaky. This is, like, a horror movie for children.
Yeah, and we both discussed this, and I believe, and I think you maybe believe as well, that this was the first, like, real 3D movie we ever saw. Now, we had both seen movies with the little paper red and blue glasses, but the ones that we get now,
the
sunglasses... That you'd pop the lens out of afterwards and wear them to middle school because it was a horrible time growing up. This was the very first one I ever saw.
Yeah.
And I remember it stuck with me, that's for sure.
Oh, it's so good. I vividly remember going to the movie theater to see this movie.
I do believe I saw this movie pre-reading the book.
I saw this after reading the book, I'm pretty sure.
And there is a graphic novel as well.
Okay. Also by Neil Gaiman.
I could not tell you. Neil Gaiman does illustrate, so it would not surprise me if it was also by Neil Gaiman. It is different, though. It's different than the movie or the book, and I believe it came out after the movie.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But it does have differences. I've consumed many hours of Coraline content at this point, aside from the movie, and it's quite a bit different, in fact.
Okay. Saw it so freaking long. I mean, I read the book so freaking long ago.
There are some pretty major differences between the book and the movie.
It is by Neil Gaiman.
It is, yeah. Neil Gaiman is an illustrator, so I was like, it wouldn't be surprising. Okay, so today we're going to talk about the movie.
Yes.
And then we can talk about some of the differences between the books and the graphic novel, whatever. And then... why we're really doing this episode. I'm so excited. I've recently gone onto Coraline conspiracy TikTok, and this has led me down approximately 10 hours worth of conspiracy rabbit holes that I am excited to try my best to rambly summarize for you and hope I don't look too much like Charlie Kelly with his Pepe Silvia.
Carol!
Where's all the mail going? Let's talk about the mail for a second. That's what I feel like I'm going to sound like, but I'm going to try my best to not sound like that.
Not only is everyone on that mailing list real, but they have been asking for their mail on a daily basis.
So, I'm going to do
yeah.
the... Okay, so let's crack into it.
Ooh, love it. So... This is interesting. I just wanted to say really quick, by the end of its run, it had grossed over $124 million worldwide, making it the third highest grossing stop motion film of all time after Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Well, it deserved more because Wallace and Gromit sucks.
It sucks. Chicken Run is good, though.
Hi. There's a cat freaking out in here, so sorry.
Yeah, sorry. She's a mess. All right. plot. And this is by Wikipedia, as always, because it's chaotic. The easiest. And the easy, I was trying to make it more artistic, but well, you were honest.
Yeah.
Neglected by her workaholic parents, Coraline Jones struggles to adapt to her new life in the Pink Palace Apartments in Ashland, Oregon. She meets the landlady's grandson, Wyborn Wybie Lovat, and a stray black cat. Later, Wybie retrieves a button-eyed ragdoll that eerily resembles Coraline from his grandmother's trunk and gives it to her. The doll guides Caroline to a small door in the apartment's living room.
Coraline. That's a Caroline. That's like the name everyone calls her.
Yeah. Did I say Caroline?
Yes.
Coraline to a small door in the apartment's living room that has a bricked up wall behind it. That night, a mouse wakes Coraline up and guides her to the door, which is now a portal leading to a parallel universe that resembles the real world. Coraline then meets her other mother and father, button-eyed doppelgangers of her parents who appear more attentive and caring. She returns home the next morning, where Wybie recounts the disappearance of his great-aunt. Coraline's neighbors, Sergei? Bobinski? I'm going to say Bobinski. That's what she calls him.
Yes.
An eccentric Chernobyl liquidator turned gymnast who owns a mouse circus and a retired burlesque actresses April Spank and Miriam Forcible cryptically warn her about imminent danger.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the warnings, Coraline visits the other world twice more. There she, accompanied by the mute other Wybie, is entertained by the dimension's doppelgangers of her neighbors and meets the cat, who has the abilities to traverse between the real world and the other world and speak in the latter. So yeah, the cat has like this really cool voice.
Yes, and the cat is not like, so there's, if you haven't seen this, I really hope you have.
This is like an old movie. This is from 2009.
Old movie. So there's like Wybie and there's the other Wybie
with the button eyes.
Yes, so that's how we know in the other world, the parallel universe, they just call it the other world. Mm-hmm. And everyone is called the other blank, other Forcible, other Bobinski. The cat though does not have an other. It's just him.
Yeah, there's only one of him. The mother has not been able to make another him. Yeah. Which I think is just like cat logic, because cats don't abide by the laws of nature, as Charlie Kelly says.
He's just like Coraline, in that he's in this world, but he is not a part of this world.
Right. So she can trust him. On the third visit, the other mother offers Coraline the opportunity to stay in the other world permanently in exchange for having buttons sewn over her eyes.
Freaky.
Horrified, Coraline tries to escape back to her world, but the other mother prevents her from doing so and imprisons her in a room behind a mirror. There, she meets the ghosts of the other mother's victims, one of them being Wybie's great aunt, who all call her the Beldam. They recount how the Beldam used the ragdoll, each time designed after the victim in question, to spy on them and lure them into the other world. After they accepted the Beldam's offer of having buttons sewn over their eyes, she robbed them of their souls. The ghosts tell Coraline that the only way they can be freed is by retrieving the essence of the souls, which the Beldam has hidden throughout the other world. After Coraline promises to do so, she is rescued by the other Wybie, who helps her return home. This is like a really scary movie for kids.
Yes.
I remember being like, this is freaky.
Yeah. The other mother is a scary bitch.
She's so scary. She is like both forms of her, too. I think
the Beldam is scary.
I almost think that the one where she looks more like her actual mother is scarier than her being like the monster.
The, because, like, spidery.
You know, I think it's just like she's almost her mom, but like not quite.
Quite, yeah.
Ooh. So freaky. Upon her return, Coraline discovers that the Beldam has kidnapped her parents, forcing her to return to the other world. Accompanied by the cat, Coraline proposes a game to the Beldam. If she can find her parents and the essences of her past victims' souls, they will all go free. If not, she will finally accept the Beldam's offer. The Beldam agrees, and Coraline searches the souls' presence, during which she discovers that the Beldam murdered the other Wybie for his defiance. Really sad.
Yeah.
As she finds each of the soul's essence, parts of the other world turn lifeless, leading to the entire dimension except for the living room eventually disintegrating.
And can we talk about the murder of Wybie?
Yeah, and also we need to talk about the Seer Stone.
Yes. Okay, first off, the murder of Wybie. She fucking strings his little lifeless body from a flagpole and lets it flap in the wind.
Yep.
Fucked up.
She's not messing around.
Yes. So the Seer Stone.
Yeah, the Seer Stone. So the real Forcible and Spink made her a Seer Stone out of candy.
Yes, it's like hardened taffy. It's like calcified taffy.
It's so funny.
That they like, chop into little...
with knitting needles.
Yes, and it reminds me a lot, if you've ever seen the Spiderwick Chronicles.
Right, yes!
It's that. It's the seer stone in the Spiderwick Chronicles. Exactly, yes, the same.
Exactly that. Yeah, so there's she's finding the souls. I
there's some sort of folklore about that.
I imagine there is. Let me... I've heard of seer stones elsewhere.
I think that it's actually a thing. Like, isn't it if you find a rock
with,
like,
Bibles.
A perfect hole in it? Don't they say, like, if you look through it, you can, like, see fairies and shit? Yeah. Isn't that a thing? I feel like when I was a kid, people told me that.
According to the Latter-day Saint theology, seer stones were believed to have been used by Joseph Smith as well as ancient prophets to receive revelations from God. I think we're talking more about the pagan or witchy seer stones.
I do think that there is, like, a kind of, like lore about if you find, like, a rock with a perfect hole in the center.
Right.
That if you look through it,
you can see fairies.
You can see fairies or, like, other magical beings.
Okay.
Which is in the Spiderwick Chronicles, that's how it works.
Yeah.
In here, it's a little different. This seer stone, what it does when she looks through it, the other world appears all in gray, in black and white, minus the thing that she's looking for. And in the book, the seer stone, similar thing, everything appears in black and white, but there is a green fire trail that leads her... to where she needs to go.
Right.
So, the idea, though, is that the seer stone can show you stuff that you can't see normally.
Yeah, it's and the ladies say that, like, it's good for bad things and lost things.
Yes.
And they argue. I'm not sure if I read this part, but, as she finds each of the soul's essences, parts of the other world turn lifeless, leading to the entire dimension, except for the living room, eventually disintegrating.
Yes.
Coraline then encounters the Beldam in her true arachnid-like form. One of the ghosts tell Coraline that the Beldam will not honor their bargain. Using this advice, Coraline tricks the Beldam into opening the door into the real world by claiming that her parents are behind it. After Coraline distracts the Beldam by throwing the cat at her, she rescues her parents who are trapped in a snow globe. Yeah, just straight up throws the cat at her.
Straight up. Chucks it.
Coraline narrowly escapes through the door with the Beldam in pursuit and severs the Beldam's right hand in the process. So, like, the rest of all of her body is, like, on the other world, but then her right
she hand. She has, like, a robot hand.
Yeah.
It's like a it's like a little spindly, metal spindle
yeah.
hand. And it can move independently.
Yeah. Like cousin, like, not cousin it, but, like, the little thing in a
in Adam's family. Yes, except it's not a hand. It's a piece of metal.
That looks like a hand.
That looks like a hand.
Back home, Coraline reunites with her parents, who have forgotten about their capture. That night, the ghosts appear in Coraline's dream and thank her for freeing them, but warn her that the Beldam is still after the key needed to unlock the door. Coraline decides to drop the key down an old well, but the Beldam's severed hand attacks her. YB soon arrives and, after a struggle, destroys the hand by dropping a large rock on it. The duo then toss the key and the hand's remnants into the well and seal it. The next day, Coraline and her parents host a party for their neighbors, including YB's grandmother, whom Coraline and YB prepare to tell her about her missing sister's fate.
Which is, they do it in kind of a fucked up way, too.
I have so much to tell you.
And you're like well, this isn't going to be happy.
This isn't going to be happy. This is about your missing sister that you probably miss a lot.
Hey, I found her. She's dead as shit.
She's dead as shit, dude.
But I did rescue her soul from a sort of eternal purgatory, so you are welcome.
Yeah, no need to thank me, though.
Okay, so now that's the movie. Let's transition into talking about the book, which you have an article about.
I do.
Five of the, like, biggest differences, five of the best differences. And I also know a little bit, because of all my Coraline research, I can also comment on some things, if they're not in this article, that are not in the book that are in the movie, or vice versa.
So this article is from Screen Rant. It's titled Coraline: Five Things the Book Does Better Than the Movie and Five It Does Worse. 10. Better. Coraline knows something's up in the book. Book Coraline is much more astute than movie Coraline, who desperately wants something new and exciting to happen in her life. Movie Coraline is quick to embrace the new world that the other mother has created for her, finding it much more vibrant and fun than her own dull life. But Book Coraline is suspicious right away. She knows something is wrong and quickly uses her wits to evaluate the situation and work her way out of it. Movie Coraline has been hailed as a more realistic tween, which is probably true, but she also illustrates the growth of a coming-of-age story and her transformation from bratty whiner to the hero of her own story, which makes it so good in the first place. 9. Worse. Their personalities are completely different. In the film version of Coraline, the titular character is sassy and sarcastic, pretty much rolling her tween eyes over every adult comment she hears at the beginning of the film. It's not until she loses her parents and has to save them that she fully appreciates the life she found so dull only days before. Book Coraline, on the other hand, is much more kind, being polite to all of her old odd neighbors. Some say this makes her too perfect, but it really does portray the characteristics of an only child, especially a daughter who has grown up around adults and is expected to be more mature as a result. Better, the dangers are different. Most of the scenes that feature dangers in Coraline differ widely from book to screen. The basement scene in which Coraline has to blind the other father, who looks like a big grub and quietly escapes so he can't hear her, which is frightening, is replaced by a less scary but still creepy garden scene with the other father on the back of a praying mantis where he apologizes and says he doesn't want to hurt her. So yeah, in the book he looks like a grub and
In the, if I recall correctly, in the book the other father, like, she comes into the basement, she gets locked in the basement by the other mother, and the other father is down there, but he's, like, instead of looking like her dad, he's, like, reduced into, like, he looks like a bug. He looks like a grub.
Yes.
And he tries to kill her, like, he's down there to kill her.
Yeah.
And she blinds him and then sneaks out.
Oh, man, that book is brutal.
Yeah, very.
Worse, her parents are more hands-off in the film. To be fair, Coraline's parents are not negligent in either version of her story. They're just busy people who have to work, move into a new home, and do all the things adults have to do to create a home and maintain a family. Much of Coraline's alone time is healthy for her. It allows her to utilize her imagination and creativity. This seems objective. Subjective.
To be fair, I think her parents are pretty negligent in the movie.
Yeah. Children don't have enough daydreaming time as it is, as George Carlin once said.
Thank you, George Carlin.
Thank you, George Carlin! But it can be said that her parents in the film are more hands-off, ignoring her much more and appearing indifferent to her quest for fun with them. Her parents in the book seem to care a bit more, although they too are busy.
Yeah, her parents don't really seem to give a shit at all at the beginning of this movie. They're like, fuck you, Coraline.
Yeah.
I'm fucking busy, you stupid dumb bitch. I wish we haven't even had you.
That's really the vibe I'm getting.
But then, you know, they come around.
I mean, also, you probably have to keep in mind that they just moved from...
Yeah, and they're stressed. They're stressed. And also, let's not forget that movie Coraline is really annoying at the beginning.
She is, though.
We like her because she's
sassy.
Because she's sad. But, like, she is annoying. And she's a brat.
Yeah. But, you know, Dakota Fanning does a really good job, though.
Yeah. And so, of course, her parents are, they're not, you know, they're probably tired of it.
Yeah. Probably. And she's out of school right now. So that also probably doesn't help. Better. There's no YB in the book. One of the most annoying things for many readers was the addition of YB, a character that's not found in the book at all. His presence seemed as if it were forced in to appeal to more male viewers or take away a bit of Coraline's tricky, brave, and wise characteristics, giving him more credit in directing her in how to free herself when book Coraline has to rely on herself. Then again, there are also fans who appreciated the addition of another character, especially since it gave the two some humorous moments to share in the movie. It also gave her a friend in an otherwise lonely place for a kid to grow up. YB's grandmother is also absent from the book.
Yes, here's the thing. Here's how I feel about it. I like, and again, I watched the movie first, right, and I have very little memory of the book, but I do like YB mainly because I like the addition of Miss Lovat.
So yes.
I don't know if they're going to cover this or not, but in the book, like in the movie, one of the ghost children is clearly Mrs. Lovat's sister.
Because we've seen the picture of her and her sister.
It's very clearly her. In the book, there is no Mrs. Lovat, so there is no Mrs. Lovat's sister.
Right.
Rather, it's a fairy. Like, she describes it as, like, a fairy with wings. And in the graphic novel, in fact, we see that the fairy flies. Like, it is an actual, like, fairy.
Okay.
So, that's interesting. Kind of adds another little layer.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like Miss Lovat, personally. I like her addition to the story.
Me too. Me too. Worse, little character differences. There are lots of little character differences that aren't much of on their own, but when added up, point to an entirely different pieces of media. Mr. B is named Bobo and not Babinski in the book, for example, and he raises rats instead of mice. Okay. I feel like this is film's bias against rats.
It is.
And we have talked, go back and listen to our Ratatouille episode because we dig into it.
we do.
But I think that's a classic case of rat bias.
Agreed.
Coraline is
the rats are evil in this movie.
Yeah. See, I also do think that I like this movie because it really does turn its head on like the bad black cat. This and Hocus Pocus did wonders for the black cat. Brought it back, baby. Coraline is naturally English in the book, like Gaiman himself, and the door she uses to enter the other world is quite small in the book, more like an Alice in Wonderland kind of door than the regular door we see in the film.
Okay, well, the film door is not regular. It is still a small door.
It's for children.
Now, in the graphic novel, though, it is a regular door.
Oh, okay.
It is a normal door.
Interesting.
Yes.
Wow.
This is still a small door. Let's just be clear in the movie. It's not like a giant door.
Right. The dogs in the theater talk in the book, and the cat's eyes are green instead of blue. Coraline's hair is black in the book, and there is no snow globe or ghost children eyes to find. Instead, the ghost asks her to help find their souls. Coraline also talks to herself a lot, which is why Wybie was added, so she'd have someone to talk to instead. And the other mother is tall with long fingers right away in the book.
Yes. So in the graphic novel as well, the other mother is described and looks as, like, having, like, too long of limbs.
Yeah.
Like, it's very much like she looks just like the mom, mm-hmm. but her, like, hands are a little too long.
Ooh, and that's even creepier.
And she has, like, red coffin nails.
Yeah.
Like, what she does later in the movie.
Right.
Interesting. Yes.
Worse, Coraline hates it when you mispronounce her name. While movie Coraline only mildly corrects people when they mispronounce her name as Caroline, book Coraline gets much more incensed over the mispronunciations. It makes sense since a kid's name is always the most important word to the child, and getting it wrong feels like breaking the law. This all seems very subjective.
I gotta say, you're really putting out some strong opinions on how all kids feel about their name. I don't really care.
I don't know.
I don't think I really care.
I don't really care. It's such a bone of contention for Coraline that it's presented as something as bad as being bored in the books. Nothing's changed. This is a quote. Nothing's changed. You'll go home. You'll be bored. You'll be ignored. No one will listen to you, really listen to you. You're too clever and too quiet for them to understand. They don't even get your name right. So,
well, here's what I think the Caroline-Coraline thing is. I don't think it's really about, like, we don't... Coraline's identity is, it's just that they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care enough to listen to what she's saying. Coraline's kind of a weird name, so they just simplify it, something that's easier for them to say. And I think really all that's meant to do is show that, like, people in the real world don't give a shit about her.
Yeah.
Like, she feels like nobody cares about her, and nobody does care about her.
Exactly. No one cares enough about her to learn her name. It's not yes. like they're maliciously...
No, and like it's an easy mistake.
Yeah.
It's often made, clearly.
Yes. Worse, the dialogue. As with any adaptation, the dialogue varies a lot once it's been translated to the film. Part of this is just due to Coraline's more refined manners and inner dialogue with herself in the book, but she's not the only person whose dialogue is different. Much of what the other mother says is different, as are many of the quotes from other characters. Coraline's neighbors, Miss Spink and Miss Forcible, are also the people who advise her to not play near the old, dangerous well, which of course intrigues her enough to go and search for it. One of the biggest dialogue differences, though, is in the nameless cat, who is so much more snarky and funny in the book. Even though Keith David voices the cat wonderfully in the movie, he doesn't get to say the lines about humans not knowing who they are or not wanting what you want because it would be no fun to get whatever you wanted all the time.
Wow. There's only... And movies are classically show us more than they tell us.
Oh, absolutely. Better. The other mother is scarier in the book. What is this? Laika's
version
of the other mother, who is voiced by Terry Hatcher. So the movie's version. Terry Hatcher is in Desperate Housewives, by the way.
Did not know that.
Desperate Housewives is a satire, so don't come for me.
Keep going.
But Neil Gaiman is famous for being scary by not telling us certain details. For example, when Coraline asks the beldam to keep her word, the other mother says she swears on her mother's grave.
This is such an interesting tidbit.
Coraline shrewdly asks if she even has a grave, to which the other mother replies, "Oh yes, I put her in there myself, and when I found her trying to crawl out, I put her back."
Ah!
Ookie spooky. Better. The endings are different. The ending of the Coraline book is thought to be much more appealing to by many fans. In it, Coraline already knows that the beldam's hand crossed over to the real into her world. So she sets a trap to catch it by setting up a tea party of sorts on top of the well. I remember this. I do remember reading this. It's another example of her being brave, tricky, and wise, and she even does it days after her big escape, proving her strength even further.
Obviously in the book, we know what happens. Yeah. Or in the movie, we know what happens. Yeah. YB saves her.
Yep.
So, yeah. Okay. Wow. I'm so excited to talk about...
I'm excited, yeah! Okay,
so now we're going to talk about conspiracy theories.
Yes.
So I got to give a credit to mainly two people whose stuff I watched. Now, there's no possible way I'm going to be able to cover every single thing I have learned about the Coraline conspiracies, because there is a conspiracy for everything, people. There's multiple... And I'm only going to present today my favorite theory. This is by no means... There are multiple theories. There's no, like, one. Yes, this is... I'm presenting what I consider to be my favorite and probably also the most popular.
Right.
But if you're interested in learning more, you can go to The Theorist on YouTube. He has several videos. He has an entire Coraline series.
Wow.
As well as 1 2-hour-long entire movie breakdown, which is very interesting. Not my favorite theories, but does have really interesting bits in it. And then... the other one that I really, really liked was The Fangirl. She has a Coraline series as well with like 20-something videos in it. But the top video, which is I think like 30 or 40 minutes, breaks down the theory that I'm about to tell you about, which is my favorite theory. And this is what is called the Double Pink Palace theory.
Okay.
So think back in the movie. Coraline, first night, she comes and visits the other world. She does not... go through the tunnel again. Instead, she goes to bed and she like transitions, fades back into the real world, right? Right. She does this twice.
Right.
She does this. And then finally, the last time when the mother asks her to sew the buttons into her eyes, she says, "Oh, I'm not hungry. I'm going to go to bed. I'm really, really tired." Mm-hmm. She runs up to her bed, falls asleep, wakes up. She's still in there. The other world.
Right.
So this is the theory that Coraline never gets out of the other world.
Okay.
So let me break down how this goes.
Right.
So first off, it's sort of, think of it like a, I'm going to use the fangirl theory here. Think of it like a two-story house. So there's one entrance, there's a front door that you can come in. That is the door that Coraline comes in.
Mm-hmm.
This brings her into the other world, the parallel universe that looks exactly like her universe, but is like colorful and everyone has buttons for eyes. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is the first floor of that world. Now, when Coraline goes to sleep, you can think of this sort of like the moving staircases in Harry Potter.
Right, okay.
The theory is that the other mother brings Coraline back to a universe which looks like her original universe, but is in fact controlled by the Beldam.
Mm-hmm.
And she does this for, I think a lot of people can probably guess, she does this for a couple reasons. And it's more likely to work because this sort of like hyper, if you went to a world where everything about your world was like weird and strange, and then you went back to your world, where everything looked mostly normal, would you be able to realize that it wasn't your real world?
Right. It looks just normal enough.
Especially if you're a teenage girl who just moved to this place.
Right.
So now, there are a couple theories of, like, how does she do this? Whatever. I want to talk about, first of all, why she does this. Why would the Beldam go through all of this rather than just trap... If she can do all this, why not just trap Coraline in the other world?
Right.
So I want to start with the idea that... What is the Beldam? There's a billion, million theories on this.
Mm-hmm.
Neil Gaiman doesn't really say anything. There's that line about her having a mother.
And she killed her.
And she killed her own mother.
Yeah.
Okay, so was she human?
Right.
I don't know. Point. There are several theories on this. This is my favorite. This is not from the fangirl. This is kind of a combination of multiple theories.
So this is your theory.
This is my theory. From a multiple combination. So the well, we see at the beginning of the movie where Coraline gets the poison oak and she messes with it. This well is surrounded by a fairy ring.
Yeah,
right. And a lot of people, Wybie has a line about how if you fall into the well, it's so deep that if you look up in the middle of the day, you'll see a sky full of stars.
Right.
That's the line he says. Well, we know that in the other world, it's always night.
Yes.
And at the very beginning of the movie, when we can assume the Beldam from the fingers is creating the Coraline doll, when mm-hmm. she releases the doll out into the air,
she's going.
It goes up, and it looks like it's floating in water. If you look at, like, the hair.
Right.
And in the graphic novel, the other mother is often described and looks like her hair is sort of like it's always, like, floating in water. The way your hair looks when it's floating in water.
Right.
So I kind of have a theory that it's possible. Now, also, I got to bring it back to the Pink Palace. Mm-hmm. And the fact that this is set in Ashland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
It's confirmed that it's set in Ashland, Oregon. Ashland, Oregon was settled in, from the time the movie was made, 150 years earlier.
Okay.
Well, it was happening 150 years earlier in Oregon. Witch trials were happening.
Oh, shit.
Okay. So I think that there is a possibility that the Bell Dam, or perhaps the Bell Dam's mother, may have owned the Pink Palace apartments originally.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's possible that the Bell Dam was drowned in the well
mm-hmm.
For being a witch, but upon drowning, ended up in the other world.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
Now, I don't know what happened here, because now we got to talk about what does the Bell Dam eat. The Bell Dam clearly doesn't eat normal food. She has access to normal food. She does not eat it. She never eats it.
Her plate is always empty whenever.
But she also clearly doesn't eat flesh or blood.
Mm-hmm.
Because if she did, she would just kill Coraline.
And eat her.
And that would be much faster.
Because that's what she needs her for, if we're to believe that she needs her to eat.
In addition, she clearly, like the ghost children, say that she ate up their lives. Mm-hmm. And that it didn't hurt.
Yeah.
Which kind of implies that she lives on souls
mm-hmm.
or magic, or I'm thinking she lives on love.
Whoa.
Now, this is because she constantly is talking about how, I just want you to love me, Coraline. That's all I want to do is for you to stay here and love me. I'll give you whatever you want mm-hmm. as long as you love me.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are a couple things. A lot of those children, the ghost children, mm-hmm. chose to stay, and
right.
they loved her. And they let her sew the buttons in their eyes, and they chose to stay and love the other mother.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's going to come a time when children don't love their parents
it's
the way
much.
That they did. And so, what did the Bell Dam do? I don't know. Maybe she killed them. Whatever, they're ghosts now, right?
Mm-hmm. She ate up our lives, meaning she lived with, she, like, kept them until
they were too old.
Right.
Now, let's talk about the neighbors.
Okay.
Because, well, okay, Allison, double Pink Palace, what the fuck is Mr. Bobinski doing there, and what are Spink and Forcible doing there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, another theory. There's more than one type of love. There's more than love for a mother. And actually, what would be an even longer lasting love? Love for the self.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that all of her neighbors are washed up performers.
Right. Right. That is weird.
And that she could give them a universe where they can always remember themselves in the heyday of their performance careers.
Right.
Now let's talk about the candy jars.
Oh.
That Spink and Forza will have. There's 3 dates on the candy jars. There's like 1926 or 1921 or something mm-hmm. like that. 1930s, and there's a 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
That puts, and then if we look at the ghost children,
mm-hmm.
you've got Huck Finn Jr.
Yep.
Who, and then you've got
Little House on the Prairie.
Little House on the Prairie, and then you've got the sister, Miss
right.
Lovat's sister, who we can assume is about 1960s.
Right.
So if we assume that about every 30 years she's needing to feed, there is one, that means they should have one more jar around the 1990s from when this movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll touch on that in a second. We'll come back to the 1990s.
This movie came out in 2009.
Yes.
Okay.
So, approximately, like, from the 1960s.
Right.
We should have the 1990s.
Got it.
Before she needs to feed again.
Yes.
If she's feeding about once every 30 years.
Right. It style.
Yes. But we're going to skip that for now. We're going to skip the 1990s. And we're going to say Coraline's 2009 here. She's, like, 2010-ish era. We've got the kids who came in.
Mm-hmm.
Then she took a little break and she got Spink and Forcible, who were washed-up burlesque performers mm-hmm. and who would have been dying around the time that the burlesque scene was falling out of style.
Right.
Then you've got Bobinski, who is a Russian immigrant who says he comes from a family of circus performers mm-hmm. Around the time that the circus was being run out because of movies and TV. So he is compelled to stay because he wants to remember mm-hmm. what it is to be a very famous performer. Okay, and then, of course, we know how the children work. We've already figured that out. She entices right. them, whatever. Okay, so if Coraline can't love the mother, if mm-hmm. that's what we figured out, then it makes sense to set up this little journey, this mm-hmm. little self-discovery journey right. for Coraline to go on so that Coraline has an immense amount of self-love
right.
and self-confidence. So, we know that anything with the buttons, the other mother
controls.
So why does other YB and the other father help Coraline when in theory they are filled with the soul sand, just like the rats,
right.
just like the doll? Why would they have autonomy?
Right.
How do we know that the other mother isn't just telling them to do that stuff so that Coraline trusts them and can lead them in the direction? I mean, think about this. YB's the one who tells or, like, takes her on all the adventures.
Mm-hmm.
The dad is the one who lets too much slip about the other mother.
Right.
The ghost children are the ones who say, oh my god, it's so dangerous, you have to get out of here, mm-hmm. but also stay and find our souls.
Right.
Okay, weird. You're already dead.
Yeah.
Also, okay, the other mother's been planning this for so long. She's got all this stuff built up, and yet she puts Coraline in the room with all the children who she's previously killed who are gonna rat on her.
Right.
So now you're saying, but Allison, the button eyes. What about the button eyes? The ghost children don't have button eyes. Coraline's mom doesn't have button eyes in the other world. The buttons don't matter. The buttons are meant so that Coraline feels like she's safe when she's with real eyes. How do I know this? I know this for two reasons. First off, in the last time Coraline is returning to the other world to save her parents,
mm-hmm.
and you see her mom at the end of the tunnel, and she's like, Coraline, she yes. goes to hug her, it turns into the other mother.
So she can pretend to not have button eyes.
Her mother does not have button eyes in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. So the other mother can pretend.
The other mother can do no button eyes.
It's
on
possible.
Top of this, let's go, we're thinking Double Pink Palace. The first time she returns to the real world, she's not in the real world at all.
Mm-hmm.
She's in the other world that is pretending to be the real world. Okay, if the doll is her spy, which we're told,
right.
that the doll can see stuff, which is how she knows, like, oh, what Coraline likes to eat, that Coraline's really bored, that Coraline mm-hmm. likes to explore, whatever, whatever, whatever.
Right.
How does she know what clothes Coraline likes? Because the doll doesn't go on the shopping trip where Coraline doesn't get the gloves.
Right.
So how does the other mother know that Coraline wants new clothes? Well, she knows because she's there
Whoa.
Taking Coraline shopping.
So she had already taken the parents and had already infiltrated.
The parents weren't taken at all. Coraline never left the other world, and she's pretending to be Coraline's real mother.
So this is not the real world. This is like a Double Pink Palace, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Coraline has never, after the first time coming in, she has never gone back. She has been transported to the second floor palace.
Which is just a manipulation tactic by the bell.
To try and make the real world even worse. To try and say, nobody likes you here. Your mom doesn't want to give you your stupid mm-hmm. thing. You gotta wear gray clothes. You got no friends. Over here, you got all this stuff. But then it works out because every time Coraline escapes to the real world, how did the Beldam lure both of her parents in at the same time? And on top of that, if Coraline needs button eyes to be trapped there, her parents clearly didn't consent to having buttons sewn into their eyes. I don't think any adult would consent to having buttons sewn into their eyes.
It's true.
So in that case, it's fake.
Yeah.
Also, what kind of a parent would write help us
yeah.
to their 9-year-old daughter. That's what I was
thinking, yeah.
Because they didn't.
Because it was the Bell Dam.
Because it was the Bell Dam. All of it is fake. The ghost children are fake. The ghost children are made up by the Bell Dam. Every single thing in both worlds, aside from the literal the very first time they go. You'll also notice that Coraline does not interact with any of her neighbors until after she's already crossed through.
Right.
She comes back the next day.
She interacts with Wybie first, right?
I believe so, but I don't even think that's till the second day she's there. Because she's bored, and they tell her to go count all the blue stuff in the house.
Right.
And that's when she finds the door. They see that it's bricked up. They mm-hmm. have a horrible dinner. She goes to bed. In the night, she crosses through the tunnel, and she never comes back.
Right.
That's when she meets Wybie. That's when she meets Sphinx and Forcible. And that's when she meets her everything.
Wow.
Okay. So now, let's talk about why. Wybie. Let's talk about Wybie. That's important. Why were you born Wybie?
Why were you born Wybie?
Here's what I believe. Miss Lovett's sister was taken, correct? She had the doll in her possession.
Yeah.
The doll looked like her sister. However, at some point, the other mother got that doll back because in the very first movie, we see her take that doll apart and put Coraline's doll together.
Yeah, that's the entire opening sequence.
So here's what I believe happened. I believe... We're told that Miss Lovett never rents the Pink Palace to people with kids, so why right. now? We know that Miss Lovett, Miss Lovett knows about the Bell Dam.
Right.
Or at least has some kind of suspicion.
The place is dangerous for children.
Yeah, she knows something is happening where children go missing.
Yes.
So here's my thought is, Miss Lovett's father may have possibly bought the Pink Palace apartments or owned them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, didn't leave because his daughter's missing. So Miss Lovett eventually takes it over. But we can see in the movie that Miss Lovett's not super mobile by the time she lives right. there. We know she doesn't live on the property. Mm-hmm. So what's going on there? I believe that Miss Lovett's son... Because Wybie is her grandson.
So Wybie's dad.
Father, which we never see, was possibly taken by the Bell Dam in 1990.
Right.
That is the missing time. Now, I think it's possible that he did not fall into the Bell Dam's trap of offering love, but perhaps tried to play a game with the Bell Dam, which is why he suggests it to Coraline. But perhaps he lost and the Bell Dam cheated and he becomes the cat. And he has the ability to cross dimensions.
Holy shit, cracked it!
Which is why he can tell Coraline about the game, why he knows so much about the other world, why would he know about that? Because he is cursed to, yes, he can return to the normal world or whatever, but... only as a cat.
And he can't talk in the real world.
And he can't talk. That's why he's always around Wybie. That's why he's super friendly to Wybie. Because Wybie is his son. Now, 30 years
I have chills.
Okay, 30 years have gone by, right? It's time for the Bell Dam to feed. But there's only one kid at the Pink Palace currently. That kid is Wybie.
So she's a sacrificial lamb.
So Miss Lovett, Miss Lovett sets up Coraline to why is the key in the drawer? Why is the skeleton key, which has access to this door, why is that just sitting there? Why is the well not boarded up? I believe that there are two entrances to the other world. I believe the well is one of them, and I believe that door is the other.
Woof.
Now, let's skip ahead to the end. Coraline's beat. The Bell Dam.
Right.
She's escaped. Now, we can talk about what's going on with those eyes. Coraline clearly loses the game. The timer runs out before she finds even the last soul, let alone her parents.
Right.
She lost.
Mm-hmm.
But the world just pauses for her. You'll notice that the timer pauses.
Yes.
And then completes itself after she finds the last soul.
Yes.
Okay. Weird.
Weird.
Not weird if the Bell Dam is letting her win. So then right. she escapes, goes back into the real world. Okay, the Beldam has a robot hand. You're telling me this robot hand can't piece its little self back together and take this key that she throws into the well? Well, if the well is the other entrance to the other world, Coraline just basically threw the key from the top layer where she's stuck into the bottom layer where the Beldam lives. Whoa. So the Beldam now has the key back. And Coraline has essentially locked herself into the other world forever. So even if Coraline ever does figure out that she's stuck in the other world, mm-hmm. she can't do anything. There's only one key. Why would there only be one key? Because the Beldam never lost it.
Whoa.
And then let's go on to just the ending, the parts of the ending that don't make sense. Why all of a sudden, at the very end, are her parents and neighbors acting exactly how she wanted to all the time?
All the time.
Now we're gardening. Now we're doing all this stuff.
It's like out of left field.
It's a little too much of a happy ending.
It is.
Considering how messed up this movie has been. And then the very, very last scene, the cat goes behind the post and he disappears. It disappears. Because he's going between the other worlds.
Oh my god, I have chills, Allison!
And that is the Double Pink Palace theory. There are about 8 million theories about who is the Beldam, what is she? Some people believe the Beldam's a fairy, and that perhaps she feeds on magic. Some people, whatever. I think
that all that makes sense to me.
There you go.
The timeline makes sense. Wow. Wow. I think you just shook me, Allison.
It shook me. Some people, I do want to say there is a theory that some people believe that Coraline's parents actually set her up and that they were in on it as well. I don't think there's enough evidence that her parents, like, hate her.
I think they're just neglectful and Miss Lovat.
I just think they aren't that involved, and that's probably why Miss Lovat let them come.
Yeah.
It's because they just didn't really care that much. They weren't paying attention. And by the time Coraline was gone, too late. What are you gonna do?
Yeah. Wow. Oh my god, that is so crazy. Thank you so much for breaking that down for me. I was so pleased to hear that you were going to be doing the lion's share of the research for this episode.
I hope everyone enjoyed. I hope it makes sense. There are a few things I think that still, like, are iffy, but I don't know. There's a lot of stuff in this movie.
It's a layered film,
but I think that this makes a lot of the, like, plot holes make sense.
I think it definitely does.
And it also makes sense, like, why the Beldam would say that her power is so limited, because if you contribute it back to she wants Coraline to believe that she has these limited powers.
That she's limited within her world,
and that her world can't even be big. Like, all I can do is make this house for you. Like, that's how limited my powers are, then you wouldn't necessarily notice if in the real world you're going and doing stuff. And, like, it also, like, she goes to the shop, but she'd never been into town before. She didn't know what town looked like.
Yeah.
So this place is entirely new for Coraline. She can just make everything up. She can make up school. She can make up everything. And now she has the love of Coraline loving herself, and she has the love of Coraline loving her as Mrs. Jones.
Yeah.
And that's something she can feed off of.
For a long
until time. Coraline dies.
Yeah. That's true. Wow. That's really good. Some solid reporting.
Thank you. Yeah. I hope that tracked.
It did. I thought it tracked.
Good.
Whew. That was really good.
Thank you.
You have a review?
I do. I have a couple.
Do you want to rate it first? I know we both give it.
Oh, I give it a 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
I love this movie. And the theories only make me love it more. Some people don't like the theories, so they think it ruins it. I like it.
I think it makes it sadder, but I think it makes it better.
It's creepier, and it's also like, is it really that sad? Coraline gets everything she wants. And
that's
it
true.
Seems like the Beldam really does just want love. Like, yes, the Beldam eats it, but look at Bobinski and Spink and Forcible. That's the category Coraline falls into.
Yeah, it's so true.
Not the other category.
Right.
She doesn't fall into children being eaten up. Okay, I have two. The first one is called Not Appropriate for Children.
I was wondering if we were going to get some of these.
A lot of them are about not being appropriate for children. captivating storyline, but the movie is not appropriate for children. There are references to witchcraft.
Oh, no.
Divination, torture, nudity, and the main character takes the Lord's name in vain multiple times. The special effects were great, although many parts seem more like an acid trip than a children's movie. I also found a lot of reviews that did not seem to know that this was stop motion.
Have you seen stop motion?
The plot draws you in. My wife and I both found ourselves captivated by the storyline. But be forewarned, this is a horror movie designed for children, and it was well done, and it has real potential for horrifying your children. One of the characters is an older woman with enormous breasts. Yeah. And that is accurate.
That is very true. That is, like, they go around her body.
They are gigantic.
They're bigger than the rest of her body.
Yeah, they are, some would say, physically impossible.
Some would say not in the laws of nature.
At one point, she appears in a costume that consists of a bikini bottom and pasties, while she jumps up and down repeatedly, breasts bouncing all the while.
That is true.
That is accurate.
That is true.
The villain has godlike powers and is terribly cruel. She tortures some dead children and holds them hostage, not to mention she steals everyone's eyes and sews buttons in their place.
Yeah, that's the story.
She is made of needles, but eventually morphs into the shape of a spider. Older children might be able to handle this movie, though I would not consider it appropriate. Younger children could be seriously haunted by this movie. If you insist on taking your children, I suggest watching it first for yourself.
That guy just is, like, trying to make excuses for why he was scared of
Yeah,
Coraline.
He was scared.
He was scared, and he's
scary.
Just like, this is not appropriate for children. It's just so scary for children.
I would say that this movie actually inspired a love of, is one of the main factors for why I love horror so much.
I would agree. I would, for me as well.
Okay, and another 1 out of 10, Dole is Ditchwater.
Whoa.
This film is perfect. Perfect if you enjoy tediously boring and cliched CGI films, that is.
Oh.
This is not CGI.
It's stop motion.
It is stop motion. The part where Coraline discovers a hidden door in the old house and the family had just moved into, yawn, is case in point. And the CGI direction is completely uninspired.
Buddy, I don't know. You gotta stop referring to a CGI.
Well, he's not gonna stop. Instead of attempting to be inventive, the director simply performs a lot of visual camera zooms and boom movements.
What?
Really big in stop motion, by the way. The best thing about this film is the opening credit sequence, showing an old doll being given a complete makeover by some kind of robot. Did this person stay to the end?
I don't think they stayed to the end of the movie.
It's the Beldam, and she's made out of sewing needles. Seeing that, I thought to myself, I like this film already. Oh, but what a lesson in why one should not be too hasty in one's judgments.
Okay.
The computer-generated images get gradually less imaginative and more amateurish with every sorry minute the film drags on.
What?
It's like all the energy went into those opening couple of minutes. Again, not computer-generated. And also, yeah, what? I'm sorry, the garden sequence, the rat circus, the burlesque show, and of course the ending is terrifying and visually stunning.
Yeah.
I confess I didn't finish the film. Yeah.
I hate when people do this.
I just couldn't justify to myself why I should waste any more of my life on this cynical, soulless, unimaginative CGI by numbers rubbish. I made it just about halfway, and then by extracting two of my teeth, and then only by extracting two of my teeth with pliers to prevent my mind from being numbed. I'm sorry, I had to scroll. Completely by this dirge. I maybe could have persisted with the film, but only by sticking pins in my testicles.
Jesus.
And I decided I preferred the just walk away option. Save my advice, or take my advice, save your testicles, walk away.
Jeez.
I want to say 75 people reviewed that and only 16 found it helpful. So, you know, maybe if you're gonna, like, absolutely rag on a fucking movie's visuals, you should just look up what it is.
Maybe you should just look up what kind of visuals it is just to make sure you're not making an ass of yourself.
Also, I don't think it really looks like CGI.
It doesn't. It clearly looks like claymation stop motion.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, well. Did you know there's, like, a Coraline museum you can go to where it has, like, all the little sets and miniatures
and stuff?
Well,
there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. That's
and all
so
the, like,
cool.
little different Coraline faces and outfits and stuff.
That's so cool. I love claymation. It's such a cool art form.
Something else that's interesting is Coraline's hair. It's blue in the movie,
it's
right?
But it's black in the picture.
And it's, yeah, it's dyed because she has brown hair in the picture.
Isn't, like, the people suggest that, like, that's the agreement of her moving with, like...
Yes, a lot of people think that her parents did it because they were like, shut the hell up,
shut
Coraline.
The hell up, like...
That's, like, one of the main things that people point to who believe that her parents set her up is that they point to the idea that they let her dye her hair because they knew it wouldn't matter for school because they knew she was going to dye. But I don't really
think I don't really think so. I feel like that's not as realistic as just them
also
not being involved.
I think if that was going to happen, like, we would have seen a little bit more of her parents. Like, her parents really didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Through the whole movie.
I would agree.
The only thing they do that's kind of sus is they tell her to count all the blue things and that... That happens to end up with her finding the door.
Right.
But, like, she could have found the door in a million ways.
It's true. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
That was really interesting.
I am glad you enjoyed it.
I did. That's great. Well, we're going to go to a party, aren't we?
We are. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for listening, and watch Coraline, I guess, if you haven't.
If you haven't, sorry. Just
sorry.
Ruined a lot for you.
Ruined a lot. But thanks, guys. Take a sip.
Thanks, guys. Bye.